Oppenheimer was greatly relieved. The whole business, he hoped, was finally put to rest. When David Lilienthal learned that Oppenheimer would not be called to testify in the case, he wrote his old friend, "With so many mean and unjust things happening, we're entitled to some decency even in these days." Ironically, one day when Oppenheimer happened to be up on Capitol Hill, he stepped into an elevator and saw Senator McCarthy. "We looked at each other," Robert later told a friend, "and I winked." Joe Weinberg, now 36, had a life again, though not a job. The University of Minnesota had dismissed him 2 years earlier when HUAC had labeled him Scientist X. And despite his acquittal, the university's president announced that Weinberg would not be reinstated because of his refusal to cooperate with the FBI. Turning one last time to his mentor, Weinberg wrote Oppie asking for a letter of recommendation for a possible job at an optics firm. Weinberg assured him that, "This will be the last time I will ever disturb you." Although Oppenheimer had every reason to believe the FBI would find out about it, as they did, he wrote a supportive letter for Weinberg, who got the job. Weinberg was grateful, but years later, when asked to reflect on his relationship with Oppie, he replied, "He had had enough of me, and I had had enough of him, too." The Weinberg case had been emotionally draining, and it had been an expensive ordeal. On December 30, 1952, even before the case went to trial, Oppenheimer had dropped by the offices of Louis Strauss, telling him that he had a personal matter to discuss. His attorneys, he said, had just billed him $9,000 for their representation of him as a potential witness in the Weinberg case. The legal fees far exceeded his expectations, and he did not know how to handle it. He then asked Strauss if he, in his capacity as chairman of the board for the Institute, would recommend that the Institute pay his legal expenses. Strauss firmly replied that this would be a mistake. When Oppenheimer pointed out that Corning Glass Company paid the legal bills of his friend, Dr. Ed Condon, Strauss said the circumstances were not parallel. Dr. Condon's employers, he pointed out, had known of Condon's problems with HUAC before they had hired him. The Institute's trustees, Strauss said coldly, had no indication whatever that Oppenheimer had such problems. This, of course, was not true. In 1947, Oppenheimer had informed Strauss of his documented left-wing past. Nevertheless, Strauss suggested that his legal bills were high because his lawyers thought him quite rich and that the traffic would bear it. Oppenheimer replied testily that Strauss must know that was not the case, since his tax returns were prepared by an Institute office manager under Strauss' supervision. Strauss said no, he had no idea what his income situation was. To this, Oppenheimer said that he was not wealthy, that he had a modest income aside from his Institute salary. He allowed that some people might think him wealthy because he had inherited some quite extraordinary works of art. Clearly unsympathetic, Strauss ended the meeting by saying that he would not raise the issue with the trustees at this time. Oppenheimer left angry and humiliated. Henceforth, he knew he could count on Strauss' hostility. He decided simply to go around him and send the legal bill to the Institute's trustees, hoping they would pay it. But Strauss later told the FBI that he had persuaded the long-haired professors on the board to reject the bill. By the spring of 1953, the enmity between the two men was palpable to everyone who knew them.